You better buckle up for this one. We are packed up until 6 o'clock with your daily local sports fix. It's the Sports Rush. I am Brett Rump along with Caleb Hatch. Coming up on the show, we'll talk to Norwell baseball coach Dave Goodmiller. As the Norwell Knights were the survivor in baseball over the weekend, they advanced to the 3A semi-state. We'll talk to him about his two wins on Saturday in the regional and what to expect from their next opponent, Hanover Central. That comes up at 4:20. Also, Justin Cohn will join us. The Comets now ready to go into the playoffs. They'll start their playoff run tomorrow night in Wichita, as Wichita was the team that ended up second in the Western Conference. First place winner was Allen. And so Allen will play Utah. It'll be the Comets then going to Wichita to start that series tomorrow night. And even though the Comets are third and Wichita is second, it's the Comets that are going to have home ice advantage in this series because of ice availability in Wichita. So games 1 and 2 will be in Wichita on Tuesday and Wednesday. And then the series shifts to the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum. Games will be played on Friday, Saturday if necessary. And if they need a game 5, that will be coming up on Monday. But we'll talk to Justin Cohn and find out everything that happened this weekend with the Comets and what the plan is for the playoffs as far as goaltending and who's going to be available, who's healthy, because that is another question. There were a couple of guys that either left games or rested over the weekend. We'll find out how the Comets look as they get set to start their playoff run. 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Questions, comments, or suggestions, you can always fire away and let us know what's on your mind on this Monday at 46862. There's so many things to talk about. I mean, there was Pacers news coming out over the weekend. We have Colts news to talk about, and it's Colts news somewhat indirectly because of what happened with Julio Jones. But, I mean, Caleb, you talk about a packed weekend. I mean, you go back to Friday, and it's amazing all of the sports that we had since Friday. And I went back and thought, geez, on Friday night, Canadians were beating Winnipeg 1-0. Vegas was beating Colorado 3-2. Now it's the Canadians leading that series 3-0. Vegas evened up their series yesterday. It's now 2-2 with Colorado. You had the Clippers that were facing elimination on Friday night. They avoided the elimination game in Dallas. They won it 104-97. And, of course, the Clippers came back yesterday and won at the Staples Center, becoming the first home team to win in that series and taking the series 4-3. So now the Clippers advance to take on Utah. That game will be tomorrow night. Also on Friday, the Tin Caps got an exciting 4-3 win over Cedar Rapids, a come-from-behind win after they were down 2-0. They end up winning at 4-3, an Augustine Ruiz home run. And then on Friday as well, how about the Comets and what they did to Utah? They jumped out to a 9-0 lead, eventually won the game 9-1. Now, that was the exciting part of the weekend. On Saturday, it was kind of role reversal because Utah put the old smash on the Comets by almost a similar number. But at least we saw the Comets offense actually get in gear and click for a night against Utah. And then it went all the way through the weekend, whether you were watching the golf, the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, whether you were hooked on baseball over the weekend, you had a big series with the Reds and Cardinals. Ah, what about those Cincinnati Reds?
Four games, baby, of the Cardinals.
I'm a Reds fan again.
Yeah, hanging around in the NL Central. They're relevant past June 1st. That is all I can ask for.
The Cubs and the Reds are both somewhat relevant in the National League Central. You felt like maybe the Reds were doing a favor for the Cubs, but in reality, the Reds are right back into the thick of it now. So it's anybody's division. But big weekend for the Reds over the St. Louis Cardinals. You had, what else? The Cubs got the win yesterday over San Francisco. The San Diego Padres over the weekend were DeGrommed. Man, is Jacob DeGrom got to be the best pitcher in baseball right now? I don't know what his spin rate is. That's the popular thing now with pitchers, and that's obviously all the talk with whether pitchers are using some type of a sticky substance. I don't know if DeGrom has to because he throws the ball hard, and the sticky substance isn't necessarily going to give you a lot of extra velocity. But this guy throws 98, 99, 100. He can spot the baseball. He's got a wicked slider, breaking ball, changeup. You just throw it all up there. And I think overall, combined right now, there's nobody better in baseball than Jacob DeGrom. And he proved that against the Padres as the Padres struggled to even get a hit against him on Saturday night. But boy, it was just a packed weekend. And then last night, a lot of people buzzing on social media about Floyd Mayweather and Logan Paul. And to me, it was like, buying a pay-per-view event for a WWE match. It just, to me, wasn't, I didn't buy it. I don't know who did, if they felt they got their money's worth, if they saw what they wanted to see. Logan Paul is what? Is he appealing to like a younger generation?
Yeah, he's a YouTuber. That's all I know about him. I know nothing else.
And
he's,
so you
he's
were even too old to be a Logan Paul.
Yeah, Logan Paul and then his brother Jake Paul are both YouTubers who have like millions of subscribers.
How do you get that job? What do you do to
you
get
just
that job?
Say controversial things and somehow create a following on the internet. And yeah, go viral.
Yeah, that's crazy. What a gig. But then he goes in and fights Floyd Mayweather. Was it a setup? There's some now that are looking at this video that was released. Did you see the video that was posted this afternoon where it appears that maybe at one point Mayweather connected pretty cleanly on Logan Paul and may have even knocked him out, but Mayweather held him up? Because remember how they said it was a lot of hugging? That he actually reached out, grabbed him, and hugged him against his shoulder until he came back to, and then he was able to finish the round and go back to his corner. And now there's the conspiracy theorists that are posting this video everywhere saying this whole thing was a setup. It was staged to begin with. It was a fix. And that because the only way the fight was going to be decided was if it was a knockout. As long as they went the full distance, it was basically a draw because there was no judging. So, you know, it's everybody's own personal opinion. And so there's a lot of people now that are convinced that this thing was staged to go the distance, to get everybody talking about it, just to bring more eyeballs and more mentions to Mayweather and to Logan Paul. And that's why when Mayweather connected, apparently he got him pretty good right on the side of the head. And they said that if you look at the video, Logan Paul just kind of wilts and goes limp. And as he does, Mayweather gives him a clutch around his kind of his neck and holds on to him and holds him for a few seconds until basically he kind of comes back. And then he was able to get back to his feet, get to his corner and proceed. I think that might have been the next to last round or something, but Yeah, check out the video. You didn't watch it, though.
No. I would never waste money on a Floyd Mayweather fight. I have watched his fights before, thankfully, again, not spending my own money. But I can't think of a more boring boxer than Floyd Mayweather, a guy who's all defensive, who's never on the attack, and could have, should have easily knocked this guy out. But instead, they do it all for the show, kind of like you mentioned. I mean, it's just like, why are people falling for this? And it also is, it kind of brings into question, I mean, how bad of a state is boxing in right now? This is all that, I mean, there are no up and coming stars in boxing. Everyone who's a star in boxing is pretty much semi-retired.
Well, yeah, boxing's not the same as it was when I was a kid. Of course, it was televised in black and white back then. But I mean, you think of all the great boxing matches, and there were boxing matches that I paid for that were pay-per-view. Now, originally, all of the big boxing matches were part of like Wide World of Sports, or they were something that was a national televised event. But as you got into my, let's say around 30-ish, 30 years old, then you got the pay-per-view events. And that's when you started to have to pay for things like, Vander Holyfield, Mike Tyson, those fights and stuff like that. And you had two choices, either pay an outrageous fee to sit and watch it at home, or you pay, $10 and you go to a sports bar and watch it.
The last big fight before this one that I can think of was McGregor and Mayweather.
Yeah.
And that was like, 2-3 years ago?
And
at least McGregor is MMA. I mean, he's a UFC fighter.
He's a fighter.
But, yeah, you can say that more ways than one. But, I mean, at least he's in the realm, you know, of that, whereas you have a YouTube star, and this is supposed to be a draw. Personally, I flipped on USA-Mexico pretty late in the game, but it was wild.
And that was the other thing that happened last night I was going to bring up. I mean, you talk about putting the bow on the weekend. You had this Mayweather-Logan Paul fight that a bunch of people were buzzing about. But then it was like this big attack of social media on the USA-Mexico soccer match. I never did find it. I don't know what network.
CBS Sports Network, which I know is very limited.
That's what I thought it was. And so you got
soccer,
kind of like I get Pacers basketball.
Correct.
And you don't, because I did not have CBS Sports Network.
Yep.
That's why I was not finding the soccer match, because I've tried to filter my guide to only the stations I get for free, and that's not one of them. And so tell me about it. What happened?
Well, I turned it on pretty late, as in they were already in extra time. Christian Pulisic had just scored the goal to put USA up 3-2. And when I flipped it on, it's when Gio Reyna, who is an upcoming star as well for U.S., son of a former U.S. men's national team great back in the day, but he'd got struck by a water bottle by a Mexican fan and from the crowd, like in the celebration. So they were throwing water bottles and stuff on the field at the U.S. players.
So it was a soccer match and an NBA game broke out.
Yeah. And so they were helping him off the field. And that's when I turned it on. It was, I don't know, like 112th, 114th minute. And then it was still wild because late, you know, basically in stoppage time, essentially, Mexico, they went to review. They called a handball in the U.S. and Mexico had a chance to equalize it. And the backup goalkeeper for the U.S. stopped the penalty kick. And then the U.S. played out, I mean, because of all the stoppages, played out the final like 10 minutes or so and won 3-2.
You almost never see a penalty kick stopped.
Yeah.
It seems like the easiest thing with that huge goal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the U.S. made a penalty kick before and just a beautiful shot by Pulisic, whereas the player from Mexico went low, kicked to his left, and really, I mean, it's a guessing game and you're the goalkeeper there. Goalkeeper guessed correctly, and then ball bounced around a little bit after Mexico kept it in play, then got the save, and then, I mean, basically it was just dribbling.
Okay, everybody knows on this show, Caleb, mm-hmm. that I follow soccer every 4 years, World Cup soccer.
Yeah.
And so what did this mean? What was the significance of this match? Because it brought a lot of people to social media talking about it, weighing in on it. So there was clearly some pride or something at stake. I just never really understood what.
So this was a new thing. So anytime the U.S. plays Mexico, I mean, it's a rivalry mm-hmm. game. Match, sorry, not game. I am, I guess, the resident soccer expert, which is hilarious because I follow pretty much the men's national team and just have a peripheral understanding of what's going on in world soccer. But this was the CONCACAF Nations League final. So like they do this in other, you know, groups like of football around the world. So there's like CONCACAF, for example, is one of them. Euro 2020, which is delayed a year, is happening also right now in Europe. Which is all European teams. There's one for South America. So
is it connected to World Cup qualifying in any way?
No. That my understanding, it's not. However, anytime the U.S. beats Mexico, it's a big deal.
Right.
I mean, very big deal.
With anything.
There's a lot of history.
It doesn't even have
correct.
To be anything on the line.
So it's a draw just when they play, whether it's a friendly, whether it's a qualifying match for CONCACAF, whether it's this. I can't imagine a World Cup match, how wild that would be between these teams. So it's a big deal regardless. And with the U.S., this was kind of like a big moment because it's the first time we've seen a lot of the top American players back from Europe playing on the national team, the players who play, you know, in the Champions League, the Premier League. And you had guys like Gio Reyna and Christian Pulisic. There's a lot more talent from the U.S. team that's playing in Europe, which is a huge deal. And Pulisic especially, I mean, he is the thing in men's soccer. Yeah.
We're going to have to take a time out. We've got so many things to talk about. We didn't get halfway through what we were hoping to talk about just in our first segment. So it's going to be a busy show. Let me tell you, we've got NBA talk. We've got news from the NFL that could impact the Indianapolis Colts. Plenty more on the way, including Justin Cohn, who will join us coming up in about 15 minutes. And coming up next, we talk to Dave Goodmiller. He's the Norwell baseball coach. He'll be on the line with us right after the break. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. I mentioned on the show before, the regional basketball Saturday is my favorite day of the high school basketball calendar. Maybe even a close second could be baseball regional Saturday. And I love it just because it's such a challenge to the team that survives the test. You've got two games in one day, which means you have to have some depth in your pitching staff. You can't just ride through a day with one arm. It tests the mental and physical abilities of your team. Baseball is a very mentally fatiguing game. There's a lot of thought that goes into baseball. And so when teams win regional championships, to me, it really means something. And I can appreciate it, being a former baseball player, what it takes to get through a grueling, grinding day, especially when it's 87 degrees outside. And that is what the Norwell Knights did on Saturday. They are the regional champions of the Belmont Class 3A Regional, and they're on to the semi-state. Joining us now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline to talk about it is the coach, Dave Goodmiller. And first of all, Coach, congratulations on the championship.
Thank you very much, Brett.
I want to kind of start by talking about the first game with Wawa C, because it kind of looked like it was going to sit on 2-0 for quite a while. It took a little bit of time for the offense to come around. You know, that's one of those things where you don't want the guys to feel the pressure building as the innings roll on. How did you handle that as a coach?
Well, we tried to – he started out really well. I think we struck out four or five of our guys struck out the first two innings, and he was throwing the ball hard. We tried to bunt a little bit, and finally, once his pitch count got up, I thought he lost a little bit on his fastball. We were able to put some runners on him and put a little bit of pressure on him, but our young pitcher, we brought our freshman pitcher in the second inning, and he shut him down through the sixth, and then we brought in our third pitcher, and he closed them down in the seventh and eighth. So our pitching really kept us in the game. But hitting-wise, we just tried to be patient, try to put some balls in play, and finally we were able to tie the game up. And Eli Riley gave us a great start in the top of the eighth with a double, and that really got our kids fired up. And we had a great inning in the eighth inning. We put up five runs that inning.
That was something you mentioned to us last week. You mentioned Eli Riley and what a key he is to this team. And there he is, leading in a moment when you most need it, and you get that extra inning win. You know, but it also kind of plays out the importance of having depth in your pitching staff. This isn't the type of a day where you can just throw one guy out there. You're going to have to count on a number two and a number three to deliver for you, and you got that.
Yes, we did. Those kids really stepped up and pitched well for us. And we told the kids at night it was going to be all hands on deck, and we just got a great pitching performance from Brett Woff, and he went seven strong for us. And we had already kind of mapped out we'd probably have to go three guys against Gary's team. But, the young kids pitched real well.
Talking to Dave Goodmiller, coach of the Norwell Knights, they were winners in the first game against Wawa C, 7-2 in eight innings, and then the 5-3 win over Leo in an all-NE8 matchup to decide the championship at an NE8 ballpark. We talked last week about the comfort your guys have in playing at Belmont, and I would almost feel like by the time you get to that championship game, it almost, I don't want to say it doesn't feel like a regional championship, but that comfort level does take a little pressure off, I think.
I think it did. I think it really helped us. I think our outfielders felt comfortable in their outfield. We're kind of familiar with the lights and the depth of the field and the foul territory and things like that. So I think they were pretty comfortable knowing where to kind of align themselves in the outfield. And, the short backstop behind us and so on, our catchers and pitchers, they were real cognizant that they'd have to, if there's a wild pitch or something, they'd have to get in there and get to the plate and maybe have a shot. And that turned out to be a big play in the night game when we Eli hustled back on a ball that just got away, and we were able to get the third out on a close play at the plate with Brett covering. So that probably did help us a little bit, feel a little more comfortable with the surroundings.
You know, it's interesting when you look at the Leo lineup that so often in high school baseball, I mean, you find a lot of teams will be stacked maybe in that two through five position in their order. But when you get to the bottom third, sometimes you can work through those innings fairly quickly. A lot of times it drops off. You know, one thing about Leo that presents such a challenge is they really do have guys that can hurt you from any part of that lineup. Every inning is important.
They do. They had their first two runs they generated with two outs. They're 8 and 9 hitters, one single and then one doubled. And next thing you know, we're down 2-1. And they can bunt up and down through the lineup. They run the bases aggressively. Gary's very good with the suicide and the safety squeeze. So you have to be ready for everything. And they're just very well coached. Like you said, they were solid up and down the lineup.
We talked last week about the challenges of scouting in high school baseball because you don't have the film exchange like you can in football.
Right.
And I'll tell you this, I went in and did my own scouting on Hanover Central, and I know I probably didn't beat you to it, but if I did, you may not want to go look at their stats.
I've already looked at their stats. In fact, I've talked to a couple coaches already, and they both said they're legit number one team, and I know their stats look good. I got some information on some of their players. Their number two hitters going to go to the University of Illinois, center fielder. They're very aggressive on the bases, steal a lot of bases. They've got two good pitchers, a lefty that just throws strikes. He's around the plate. And a 6'8 right-hander, they said, throws in the mid-80s, throws pretty hard. So we'll have our hands full for sure.
Yeah, just to throw some numbers out there, I noticed a couple of kids that are hitting over 500, and this is a legit over 500 in high school baseball. Jared Comia and Brett Mathis. You know, one is 521, scored 40 times, 38 RBIs with three home runs. Another one at 536, 33 runs, 37 RBIs. I mean, it makes it pretty tough to pitch around anybody when you've got two of them in the lineup.
That's right. And they hit two and three. Mathis is their, supposed to be their top pitcher from what I got. He's the lefty. And then Comey is the one going to Illinois. And the coaches said, yeah, those guys are legit hitters, and they can really swing the bat and do some damage.
And Mathis on the mound, 7-0 with a 0.94 earned run average. He struck out 72 in 52 innings. And then they got a second pitcher that kind of backs it up, and this might be the other kid, Peyton Olednick?
Olednick? He's the 6'8 right-hander.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He's gone 40 innings, struck out 65. So, yeah, it's a test. I mean, it's a legitimate test coming up. And, of course, with semi-state, you get one crack, so you can't hope that maybe they burn out their pitching in the other game.
Right.
But I'm sure it's a challenge you're excited about. I mean, that's, you know, that's
absolutely
what this is about. You advance, so you earn the right to play a team like Hanover Central.
That's right. I've always told the kids I want to play the best teams we can. And, you know, we're going up to La Porte. That's a very historic high school ball field and so on, so that would be a great experience. And we'll just see where we're at. I mean, I want to play as well as we can. I know the kids will compete and play hard, and we'll just see where we're at and learn from them, too. I mean, if they're really a true number one team, we'll learn some things and just decide that's the type of stuff that we need to do.
Well, I can tell you this. Your kids are competitive. You could tell that just by the way the games went on Saturday. They'll give it their best.
Thank you.
And we look forward to seeing what the result is coming up this Saturday in the semi-state. So best of luck, Coach. Appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, Brad. I sure appreciate the time.
Yep, that is Dave Goodmiller, coach of the Norwell Knights baseball team. Winners in the Belmont Regional, 7-2, an extra inning game over Wawa Sea, and 5-3, the win over Leo to take the title. Well, we've got a lot that's coming up on the way, including a report that a Dallas Mavericks star might be possibly heading to the Pacers. And before you get too excited, no, it's not Luka. Also, we'll talk some historic choke jobs in sports. Wonder why we'll talk about that today. For those of you that might have followed women's golf in between everything else yesterday, you probably know exactly where we're going with this one. Comets will get set to take on the Wichita, what is it, the Wichita Eagles?
Thunder.
Thunder, that's right. It's Wichita Thunder. Justin Cohn is the guy that's going to give us the preview and tell us what to expect between the Comets and the Thunder. And he's going to join us next on the other side of the break. So stay tuned for that as we'll bring in Justin Cohn. On to the playoffs in June. It is ECHL playoff time, and the Comets are going to get right at it in a hurry. They will start with their playoff run tomorrow night in Wichita. Tuesday, Wednesday, games on the road, and then a quick travel day into Fort Wayne so that they can play game three on Friday. Game four, if necessary, will be on Saturday, and then the final game, if it's required, will be played on Monday. So we scoot right through this playoff series to get things started. And to talk about it, we're joined now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from the Journal Gazette, Justin Cohn. Interesting week last week, Justin, in Utah. One game that really meant something to both teams, and then two games that probably didn't mean all that much, and the scores kind of indicated as much.
Yeah, I mean, I think even coming into this, that it was really more about, you know, let's get some momentum and try to create some good habits before the playoffs, because, you know, even going into that, the odds of the games meaning much for Fort Wayne were pretty minimal. So I actually think they accomplished that, you know, the 9-1 victory on Friday, they looked really good. And I don't read too much into Saturdays because they were only playing with 17 guys. It was a real makeshift lineup. So, you know, I actually think they did what they set out to do, and that was to get a little momentum going into the playoffs.
And when you talk about that Saturday game where the Comets fell 6-0, I was wondering, as far as resting some of the veterans with playoffs looming so quickly, I didn't have a chance to see who they played, who they didn't play, but was it a kind of a rest game a little bit for the Comets?
Yeah, they had to, you know, there's a lot of injuries, and I don't pretend to know all of them, but even on Friday, some guys had gotten banged up, and so they need to rest those guys, get a little bit healthy, and they knew that the travel was going to be really brutal and all the more reason to rest them because they were going to have very little access to ice before tomorrow's game.
I know one thing that confused us last week, because we just didn't know what the story was the absence of Sean Sedlowski on the trip out to Utah. We've now got some details. How is Sean at this point?
I mean, all I really know is that he's slated to join the team out in Wichita, and it sounds like he'll be available if they need him, but I don't think that they're going to rush him in any way. I mean, if they have most of their lineup back, that lineup has played pretty well, and it's good to have a player like that in reserve if you need him. So I would expect it'll be something closer to what we saw on Friday, kind of being their full lineup.
What do we know about Robbie Badun and his injury?
He's out at least through this series, but it didn't sound good. I mean, it sounded like an MCL strain was what I was told. So as of Friday, that was 2 weeks at least. So that would take him out at least through the first round. I wouldn't plan on having him anytime soon.
Can Ferguson go every game?
I mean, sure. You know, it happens all the time. You know, it's not as frequent now in the NHL, but, you know, the nice thing is, at least for the first round, I mean, these guys are used to playing back-to-back nights, so theoretically you play Tuesday, Wednesday, and then maybe Friday, Saturday, and then you get some rest. So, yeah, I think it's doable, but, you know, that's why you wanted to get a look at their backup on Saturday. And you know, it's a tough game to play in, but he didn't look great in that. So I would expect Ferguson to play unless there's some real compelling reason he can't.
Talking to Justin Cohn about the Comets. They'll take on Wichita in Wichita starting the series tomorrow night. Games 1 and 2 will be in Wichita on Tuesday and Wednesday. All right, so I guess when we look at this series and this matchup with Wichita, we at least have some kind of a gauge. These two teams did play each other not that long ago. What did we learn? What do we know that'll be some of the keys going into this series?
Well, the big thing that stood out to me was Wichita is really good in transition. You know, they would get the puck and, you know, bam, it would be up the ice, and they were catching Fort Wayne a little bit flat-footed. So that's the big thing to me, but you know, they're really similar teams, just really good defensive teams that try to generate offense off of that defense. You know, they play a little physical. They both can get in some penalty trouble. If you're looking for, you know, a real interesting matchup, it would be Fort Wayne's power play, which is number 1, I believe. against Wichita's penalty kill, which is number two. So that's like the most compelling matchup, but then the biggest mismatch may also be on special teams, and that's Wichita's power play is not very good at all. It's second to last, and Fort Wayne's penalty kill is the best in the league. So there's a big advantage there, but very similar teams, and I think a lot is going to come down to just goaltending and also who can stay out of the penalty box.
Who is Wichita's number one?
Well, they've got a couple guys. Buttonhouse is the presumed number one, but he was dealing with a little bit of an injury. So Evan Weninger is also a really good goalie, and we saw both of them when they played in Fort Wayne, but Weninger did not look great over last weekend, and Wichita really sagged into the playoffs. I mean, after they played Fort Wayne, they had the inside track to get the entire the top seed in the entire league, not just the Western Conference, the entire league, and then they lost four of their last five. So they're really crawling into the playoffs, and I feel like Fort Wayne's got a little bit more momentum. And I also feel like we probably saw Wichita's best game when they played in Fort Wayne, and I know we did not see the Comets' best game.
So going into the playoffs, I guess Allen seems to be the hot team. I don't know who we've got in the East, whether it's Florida. Who do you like as far as if you had to pick right now? And I know a lot of times you put this in the paper, so I'm not trying to steal any thunder. But who do you like as a favorite to win the championship?
To win the whole thing, I like Allen. Allen is just rolling on all cylinders. They've just got a lot of really nice pieces, and probably the biggest thing, and in the ECHL, you know, aside from goaltending, this is the thing that I've noticed really decides playoffs, is the quality of your offensive defensemen. And Allen's got probably the two best ones in the entire league. So that's such a big game changer if you've got those guys like Matt Register, guys like that. And Fort Wayne has a couple just at just one tier below. So those are big reasons. And Florida is the other clear favorite. They're the team that won the regular season championship. And, you know, they're always good. And they've just got a monster lineup as well. But I'd go with Allen just, you know, being the team with all the momentum right now.
Always appreciate you jumping on with us, Justin. We look forward to your coverage in the Journal-Gazette, online, in the paper. And, of course, you can always follow Justin on Twitter at Sports Icone. Thanks, buddy.
All right, appreciate it.
That is Justin Cohn joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Tickets available for the Comets Friday, Saturday, and Monday, and the capacity allotment is going to be about 50%. You know, I'm seeing more and more around the country where people are opening up. Is it time? Is it time that we should just go ahead and say, heck with all this, let's just open it up. And if you want to come and you want to be safe, come to the game. If you feel like it's not safe or you're not comfortable, don't come. But let's not put limitations or options on it. Let's just open the thing up. Because it seems to me like more and more around the country, I know my wife talking to her down in Florida, and Florida was always a pretty restricted state as far as certain areas where it was very tightly monitored. People were wearing the mask, but now it's pretty much full go down in Florida. And, you know, it seems like over the last month and a half, things have changed dramatically in our whole health situation regarding the pandemic. Our numbers here in Fort Wayne and Allen County have dropped considerably over the last month. We're now dealing with 10 to 15, maybe 20 cases per day, where a month ago we were dealing with about 50 cases per day. So is it time? Is it fair to teams like the Comets and the Tin Caps to continue to restrict their attendance? Should they just open it up and let people decide for themselves? If you feel safe and comfortable, if you're vaccinated, whatever your situation might be, you make the decision whether or not you go and deal with the crowd. I feel like we're about at that point. I don't know if we're there yet, and I really haven't made my mind up, but I'm asking, as far as our listeners, your thoughts. 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. It sure would be nice as you go into the playoffs to get that jungle rocking like the jungle can rock, especially taking on a good opponent like Wichita, to get the old atmosphere back down at Parkview Field as you head into the heat of the summer, the days when the weather's the best and the fireworks are in the sky. The drinks are going down on Thursdays. I mean, it would just be nice to see everybody get back into the ballpark and have things like they were back in 2019. Are we ready for that? 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We'll take a quick time out. We'll come back. It is a Monday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Caleb Hatch. How about the Notre Dame Fighting Irish? Men's baseball looked really good over the weekend. They won their, what was it, the sub-regional, semi-regional, regional, whatever that was.
Super-regional?
Super-regional. I'm not sure if it was the super, if it was the regional or the sub.
But there's a lot of words.
A lot of different levels and layers to the college baseball tournament. But all I know is they beat the Central Michigan team that hammered Michigan. And I watched that game, I think it was on Saturday, where Central Michigan, because I looked at the score and my first thought was, yeah, Michigan's beating up on the little guy in their state. And then I saw that it was Central Michigan that was ahead and they pounded the Michigan Wolverines. And then Notre Dame ended up beating Central Michigan to win that regional that was played at Notre Dame and South Bend. But other news you just mentioned, Caleb, that there's some news from Notre Dame football as far as a future schedule and a future opponent in a special place.
Yeah, Notre Dame, Wisconsin. Of course, they're playing this fall at Soldier Field in Chicago. Well, September 5th, 2026, which feels like forever from now, but it's only 5 years away. Wisconsin, Notre Dame will play at Lambeau Field. So that'll most assuredly open the season for those teams as well.
So the Notre Dame, Wisconsin game that's being played at Soldier Field, a Notre Dame home game?
Technically,
it's on a neutral site, kind of. Yeah. Okay, so you got that to look forward to, Irish football fans. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Over the weekend, a lot of interesting stories from the world of golf. It starts on Saturday. I don't know if you happen to catch the moment when Jon Rahm finished his round at the Memorial, which is just down the road at Muirfield Village in Dublin, Ohio, just outside of Columbus. Jon Rahm finished his Saturday round dominating the field. He was six up on everybody else, and he had just had a terrific back nine at Muirfield. And he finished up his round, walks off the green, and is approached by tournament officials that informed him that he had received a positive COVID test that was administered earlier that day, and that he would be disqualified from the remainder of the tournament. One round away with a six-shot lead and a $1.7 million first-place check on the line. And unfortunately for Jon Rahm, he gets a positive COVID test. Tournament officials got the word originally when he was about halfway through his round, and the officials, rather than jump to a conclusion on the first test, asked that the test be rerun, or that the sample be rerun and retested, and the second test also came back positive. Now, one of the things that that led tournament officials to have a second test done is because Jon Rahm was put into the protocol or whatever where he was considered a close contact, and he was informed that he would have to go through daily testing because he was a close contact, and found through contact tracing that I guess he was at risk. Well, he had taken tests, my understanding, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and all of the tests were negative. But it wasn't until the Saturday test where it showed up. So if he was exposed in some kind of a situation from Monday or last weekend, it took about 5 or 6 days before it actually showed up on his test. But as a result, at the worst possible moment, I mean, I can't imagine other than mid-round on Sunday that there would be a worse moment in a tournament where you get to Saturday after completing your best round of the weekend and you're dominating the field and this is basically your tournament to run away with, and you're informed. And you could see his initial reaction, bent over, head down. He was devastated in getting this news and eliminated from the field. And then it ended up going into a playoff with Patrick Cantlay defeating Colin Morikawa for the win at Muirfield. And of course, that's Jack Nicklaus's tournament that he puts on every year. But just a crazy situation in golf and men's golf on Saturday. And then on Sunday, you know, the Americans' lone hope for this U.S. Open championship was Lexi Thompson. Now, we've talked Lexi Thompson or have known about Lexi Thompson for over a decade. And she's still a young golfer, 26 years old. But she really broke onto the golf scene. I think she was 12 when she qualified for a U.S. Open at 12 years old. 16, she was playing in her first PGA tournament event or winning a tournament event. But she's been around for a long time. And if you look at the leaderboard of almost any women's golf tournament right now, it is completely dominated by the Asian golfers. They've taken over the women's game. And there's just not that many women that are competing at the highest level in women's professional golf. Lexi Thompson had a chance to claim the U.S. Women's Open and had a very comfortable lead on Sunday. She was up five shots in the front nine. She actually started around playing really well and then an absolute collapse. And I don't know if it's fair to call it a choke because maybe that's being too critical, but it was at least in the kindest sense a major collapse on the back nine. She just hit some awful shots. Her drives, she shanked a couple drives, had to chip out. And then I don't know what the whole deal was with her swing. And for anybody that was watching it, if you could fill me in, because from a technical standpoint, her swing looked awful. Her feet were bouncing all around. She was jumpy when she was hitting the shots. I just thought she looked terrible down the stretch, and that's why I call it kind of a choke, because I feel like the pressure was getting to her, and she ends up, what, a double bogey on one hole and then a back-to-back bogey. What she did at number 17 and 18 and hitting two putts short, that's a sign, I think, of nerves, you know, being tentative, and ended up losing the golf tournament after having that five-shot lead. And, of course, she was devastated. That in a totally different situation than Jon Rahm, but she was devastated. But it made me start to think about famous choke jobs in sports, famous collapses, famous misses under pressure. I'd love to get your take on it. Let us know at 46862. What are some that you remember as far as major collapses, either in a final round, in a football, basketball game, something that you can remember that was a major collapse, major choke job? 46862, let us know. That's our Parkview Sports Medicine text line. I got a couple that come to mind. We'll talk about those coming up in a little bit. Also on the way in our next hour, we'll talk about Tin Caps baseball over the weekend. The story still kind of the same for the Tin Caps. They're getting solid starting pitching, but the bullpen continues to struggle. And we'll talk about the Tin Caps as they get set to have another home series this week. That's six games against the Lake County Captains that will start tomorrow night. And, of course, coming up tomorrow, we'll have Tin Caps manager Anthony Contreras joining the show, as he does each and every Tuesday. Also, a lot of news from the NBA playoffs and news involving the Pacers and the Colts. It's all on the way as we take you home with a Monday edition of The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.